Most people don't realize that worm composting is a thing, and let alone there's so many of them here, and that, you know, it is a viable system, yes.
Yeah. Hello, and welcome back to The Food Fix, a show where I talk to lots of folks about better ways to feed the world. This week, I took a little field trip. I visited Michigan State's Recycling Center and Surplus Store, and wow, did I receive the royal treatment. I got to see the sorting robot, I touched some worms, I even left with a 2-pound bag of compost, but we'll get to that later. First, a little background on vermicomposting, or worm composting. Vermicomposting is not your everyday composting process. I learned that in a normal composting cycle, the temperatures range from 160 to 200 degrees Fahrenheit. While that's great for breaking down food waste, it kills off some of the micronutrients in the soil. In vermicompost, temperatures range from 40 to 80 degrees Fahrenheit. The worm's digestive process adds the nutrients back in, and the worm's end product, no pun intended, is a very beneficial thing for the soil. So I spoke with Sean Barton, who manages the vermicompost at the Michigan State University Recycling Center, to learn a bit more about this special process.
You're having the pleasure of talking to Sean Barton. I am the operations supervisor for the MSU Surplus Store of Recycling, specifically for processing, which is processing stuff in the Material Recovery Facility, or MRF for short, and our vermicompost operations, where we have over a million worms that eat pre-consumer food waste generated on campus.
Over a million worms.
Million worms, at least. So that is a project. So I think, you know, you guys asked, how do I know how many worms I have? And we're able to do density counts and that sort of stuff. It's been a while. I know I moved 50,000 worms from the Hort Farm to here. But I know that colony has only grown as we've been feeding them and upscaling quite a bit. And that is one of my research projects that I want to do, is to count worms in a representative sample, and maybe I can hook up with a researcher that wants to sit and count worms. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a great time. You saw how dense they're populated.
If you're a researcher who wants to count worms, please hit Sean up.
It's a thick mat, and I mean, there's a lot of worms per square foot, but that's the type of worm we have. They are Ascidia fidenta, or the red wigglers, and they like to live in the top surface of the soil, and they are one of the seven of 9,000 species of worms that there are. They're one of seven that can actually compost.
Okay, let's pause on that for a second. Only 7 out of 9,000 species can compost? The Ascidia fidenta are truly a marvel, consuming their body weight in food daily, taking the apple a day lifestyle seriously.
And they like to live in dense, you know, living conditions. Mm-hmm. They're okay with, you know, multi-story apartment buildings or living on top of each other, whereas a lot of other earthworms and stuff are more solitary creatures and don't like necessarily living in high density and stuff. And that's why we're able to feed so much to them, because we have so many worms in the same spot based off of the type of worm that we have.
This close-quartered lifestyle is really good, because when it comes time to harvest, the worms stay on the side of the wedge that is being constantly fed, making it easy for the machine to scoop out compost without snagging any of those squirmy workers. Then the harvest is dried and screened to remove sticks and anything else that got in there.
And you said they're eating all the time.
They never sleep. They are constantly eating or processing food waste. Yes, when it's colder, they do slow down. They are cold-blooded. You know, a worm is very simple. I think I said before, they're just a long tube with an intestine, one vein. They have 5 hearts. They have no eyes. They have a mouth, no ears. They have what the beginnings of a brain, but like I mentioned with Charles Darwin, has proven that worms do make decisions based off the shape of what they have. And he wrote a whole research project about it. It's called The Formation of Vegetable Mold.
Fun fact, that was actually the last book Darwin published before he died, all about worm composting. So before the worms get the compost, the food is pre-composted through a typical composting process where the temperatures are much higher and able to break the food down. This is really important because...
Well, because the worms don't eat the apple in your compost pile. They eat the microbes on the apple. Mm-hmm. The microbes really are the star of the show for compost. That's what creates that steam and that heat that gets the, you know, temperature up to 160 degrees. Mm-hmm. It's like, it will burn your hand. Like, it is that hot inside of that. And that's, you know, the hot compost. And that's done by a recipe. Collect leaves on campus. I have the biggest leaf pile I've ever seen. It's, you know, over 200,000 pounds of leaves that we slowly mix into our food waste that's collected from the dining halls. We collect pre-consumer food waste. We have the stream split where we have fruits, vegetables, and coffee grounds go to the worms. Everything else goes in a separate bin, which is, you know, the meats, cheeses, fats, oils, grease, pastas, rices, all that sort of stuff goes to a third-party composter, and it's composted in a long wind road in a hot compost style. So it's much more traditionally composted. But not all composts are the same. That's still diverting it. But, you know, vermicompost is different because of the microbes that are in the worms versus, you know, what you get from just hot compost.
So why vermicompost? Why is it better?
Vermicompost is one of those premium products because it really does, through our research and others as well, really does increase yields. It, you know, helps retain and absorb moisture better, which, you know, helps for, you know, drought resistance on plants. It usually does make your plants healthier, better, and we have the you know, data to show that. So,
and that's why you make those premium buckets that sell 20
That's
bucks.
Why our bucket sells for 20 bucks a bucket, and a cubic yard of compost from a third-party composter is about the same price, but you get 4 gallons of one, and you get 400 gallons in the other. So it is a big difference.
Michigan State isn't the only place using worm muscle to improve soil. Worm Power is one of the largest vermicomposting facilities in the world, and it's located in upstate New York. It spans 80,000 square feet, which is almost 6 Olympic pools. And their mission is similar to Michigan State's, to harness the power of worms to better grow our food. They supply to greenhouses, farms, vineyards, even golf courses. This isn't just a U.S. thing either. India is actually one of the biggest exporters of vermicompost in the world. According to Global Newswire, the Earth's vermicompost industry was worth over $100 million U.S. dollars in 2022. And it's growing fast. How's that for global warming? So back to Sean and his operation.
So when we started during COVID, you know, we had so few people on campus. We had like 500 people living on campus. There's normally like 15 to 17,000 people living on campus. Huge difference. So 500 people weren't producing that much food waste. And so we were actually running out of food for the worms. In fact, during COVID, Dr. Bierbaum and I...
Dr. Bierbaum actually started the vermicomposting project at Michigan State, and Sean took over in 2020. So shout out Dr. Bierbaum for laying the groundwork.
We actually ran out of food to give to the worms, and we mowed the lawn and fed the lawn to the worms because it was that we were that desperate for them. So when, you know, the dining hall started cooking again, at least a little bit, we were getting some food waste back, but we weren't getting just fruits and vegetables. We were getting everything. So we said, well, again, the worms don't eat the apple.
They eat the microbes. That's my favorite fact I learned, and I just wanted to flex. Anyways, they pre-composted everything. All the meats, cheeses, greasy cafeteria food, and...
The worms started showing protein poisoning, and then we had the leachate, which is that water that kind of leaches out of the wedge. That stuff was drying white crystals and, you know, evaporating, leaving white stuff behind, which is sodium chloride. And what happens when you put salt on a worm? It shrivels and dies.
Oh.
The worms were dying. So, and that's the food that you and I eat. You know, that's french fries, that's, you know, processed food, which is delicious. I love the salt and stuff, but it was killing my worms. And our digestive systems are not all that much different than what a worm is. Food for thought, literally there. So what we've been focusing on a lot is education, on teaching people how to use vermicompost and doing demonstrations. I have a big plan of having a 4-compartment raised bed where I have 0% vermicompost, 10, 15, and 20% vermicompost, just to show the difference. Because in my opinion, the best advertisement for vermicompost is a picture of a plant grown with... right next to a plant grown without, and you can see the difference in vitality, how green they are, how big they are. Like you saw those germination studies that we had out at the hoop. It's night and day difference from no vermicompost to, you know, 2 cups of vermicompost or whatever that may be.
I think the best part of this story is some of the vermicompost goes back to Michigan State's campus and is used in places like the horticulture gardens. This truly closes the food system loop. And anyone can buy the vermicompost at the recycling center by going on the website and buying a bucket of Grow Green vermicompost. Come into a garden near you. Well, that's all for this vermicompost breakdown. Big thank you to Sean for showing me around the compost. Your passion is incredible, and it was an honor to talk to you. And thanks for the bag of vermicompost. My houseplants are really enjoying it. Thank you to the Freezer Bees for rocking, and thanks to the Knight Center for employing someone who frequently falls down Wikipedia wormholes. Until next time, I've been your host, Anne.